from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in this morning's next hour, planning a summer getaway? Well, with its wealth of national, state, local, and regional parks, California is home to a staggering array of recreational opportunities. We'll have a panel of experts with us to share tips on the best hikes, campsites, waterfalls, and picnic spots. And what's your favorite under-the-radar outdoor destination? Join us for Forum. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. And as the summer approaches, we want to bring to your attention in this hour some of the riches in our own backyard that you might consider visiting once summer arrives, if not before. There are wonderful state parks and places and sites to visit, camp, hike, and spot sporting a host of recreational and other activities. And we'll hear from a panel of experts. And we want to hear from you all about hidden or not-so-hidden must-see places to visit, camp, or spend vacation time. And we'll tell you how you can participate in this program momentarily. But let me tell you who is here with us to share their expertise. Peter Fish is editor-at-large of Sunset Magazine, joins us in studio. Good morning.
Great to be back here.
Glad to have you back. Brad Day is also here. He's publisher of WeekendSherpa.com, which is a free weekly email about accessible outdoor adventures in the Bay Area. Welcome.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. And good to see Anne Marie Brown, who's also here in studio with us, author of many books, California Hiking and 101 Great Hikes in the San Francisco Bay Area, and a forthcoming book on California State Parks. So let's begin maybe talking with you, Anne Marie, about California State Parks. In fact, there's a new one, Butano, which is not too well known, right?
Yeah, it's not really a new park. The park's been around for a long time, but it is one of the lesser-known parks, and it's right here in the Bay Area.
I mean, it's about 80 miles from San Jose.
From Half Moon Bay, it's a half an hour. So if you can imagine being down on the coast and just heading south from Half Moon Bay, about 30 minutes, and you're there. And
I should have said it's new to me because I've never been there. Do you recommend it?
Absolutely. If you love to hike, which I do, there's wonderful hiking trails. And also, there's a beautiful little car campground there for people who want to drive up and camp. It's not a large campground, but very, very private, secluded in the redwoods. Each site is special in its own way. So it's a wonderful place for either day hiking or for camping and spending a couple days.
Well, for camping, hiking, and also for beautiful vistas or sights, spectacular, what is at the top of your list in the state parks?
Oh, boy, that is a really tough question. But I'll tell you a place that's been interesting me lately is MacArthur-Burney Falls State Park, which is up north towards Redding. And one of the reasons I'm excited about it is because they've fairly recently put in 24 little wooden cabins. And so even for people who don't have their own camping equipment or maybe aren't interested in particularly roughing it, they can go and spend the night up there in these wonderful little cabins. All you need to bring is a sleeping bag. And there's a big, beautiful 129-foot waterfall in MacArthur-Burney Falls State Park. And again, lots of hiking trails. Lake Britton is there if you like to fish. And it's not as heavily visited as the parks that are better known, say national parks like Yosemite or Sequoia.
Well, we're talking about all kinds of places that you might think of visiting sooner or throughout the summer. And Brad Day, I noticed in your website you've got Santa Cruz Coast right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, again, really close to Butano. And just so many, like, hidden gems down there, especially kind of when you get down onto the San Mateo Coast, going a little bit inland. Big Basin State Park is, I mean, that's a kind of a classic. There's some great hikes you can do to waterfalls. Hiking among the redwood trees, not too far away if you're fans of Games of Thrones. Kind of what I think kind of draws inspiration for me from the outdoors in that show is Castle Rock State Park, where you get some really interesting kind of rocky formations. And again, you get that really awesome coastal redwoods and nice panoramic views. But you can't go wrong heading south of San Francisco all along the coast. It's just kind of a roller coaster highway one, beautiful drive, not quite as well known as the Big Sur Drive, but I think almost quite as spectacular. And even if you go north on the Sonoma coast, that stretch of Highway 1, I think, is equally as spectacular.
Well, you don't even have to go that far because the Golden Gate National Recreation people just reopened Muir Beach after major relocation.
They did. I was actually there last weekend. They had kind of a big ceremony for it. It's really beautiful. They've kind of restored the habitat down there for some of the local wildlife, including the coho salmon, to just kind of make it a little bit more friendly for them as well as for people. And it's a great staging area to go on a hike. I think one of the most classic hikes you could do in the headlands really starts from there and kind of goes up to a nice ridge, Coyote Ridge, and drops down into Tennessee Valley, which can get pretty darn busy on a Saturday or Sunday. But if you loop that around with the coastal trail, you can do a nice 8-9 mile hike. If you really are looking for a big one with these long days of summer coming up, that could be a good way to explore.
And again, Brad Day is publisher of WeekendSherpa.com. Peter Fish is editor-at-large of Sunset Magazine. And Peter, let's talk about Yosemite because White Wolf Camp is going to be opening. Mm-hmm. And Glacier Point is open now, which is really the greatest natural world lookout, period.
I mean, the whole trip with Yosemite, and I'll have Anne-Marie chime in because she's written wonderful guidebooks about it, is sort of dealing with the crowd stuff. And
Talking about technology here.
Yes. not crowdsourcing, unfortunately. So one of the main pieces of advice I would give to people who are planning a Yosemite visit is that if you're thinking about camping, the window actually opens up 5 months ahead of time, I think on the 15th. And then you get to, you know, you make your call on the 15th, and then you can book for 5 months from there, from the 15th to the next 15th. So May 15th, keep that in mind if you're planning on camping in Yosemite this summer, because that's going to be the time where you're going to be able to start booking stuff for later on in the year. So, but you know, fabulous park, but obviously getting out of the valley is a good thing if you want to sort of avoid the worst of the crowds.
It's a terribly crowded park. I mean, let's be frank about it. I mean, you know, when we're talking about some of these outdoors places, we have to think of crowds, we have to think of ticks, we have to think of all the downsides, despite the fact that there's some extraordinary things to see and do, and we're finding out from these experts what some of those extraordinary things are. We also want to hear from you. In fact, let me tell you how you can join the program and let us know about, you don't want to give us too hidden a place that, you know, you don't want to have crowds come to make public here, thousands of listeners, but give us places that you really maybe think are maybe kind of under the radar outdoor destinations or just wonderful outdoor destinations. Let's hear from you. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls now at 866-733-6786, or you can email us. Email address is forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and camping is easier and more accessible in the state parks now, Anne-Marie. I mean, to a great extent, because they want more income.
Yeah. That's true. The thing about the state parks is that you really have to plan ahead. There's very little in the way of first-come, first-served camping in state parks, although there is quite a bit of that, of course, in the national forests and the national parks. In state parks, it's an effort of working the internet. You have to be on it, and planning far in advance. So especially if you want to camp near the beach in the summertime, that requires, I would say, anywhere between 3 months and a year's planning in advance to get that right.
And if you want to get into the Iwani, about 3 years in advance.
Would well, that be you know, right? Yosemite is a little bit different, I think, than the assumption. The assumption is that everything's packed all the time, but that's really not true. There are numerous campsites on Tioga Road, Tioga Pass Road, which is open now. It just opened up about a week ago. And those campgrounds are first come, first serve. So unless you're showing up at 5 o'clock on a Saturday night, you can get a campsite in Yosemite, but it's not going to be in the valley. It's going to be in the high country on Tioga Road, which, again, if you want to get away from the crowds, to me, that's preferable anyway.
This is a good time to go to Yosemite if it's possible because of the waterfalls. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, everything, because of our drought, everything is happening, I'd say, anywhere between 4 and 6 weeks early. So if you're interested in wildflowers or waterfalls, you need to go a little bit earlier than normal. The normal peak flow in Yosemite is about May 20th, and this year it's happening right now and has been happening for the last 2 weeks. So time is of the essence.
Do you have something you want to add here, Brad Day?
Yeah, actually, just to follow up on that note on Yosemite, one of those campsites that you mentioned a few minutes ago is White Wolf, and that is a first-come, first-served campsite in Yosemite. And that has like a little lodge there that you can have meals at. So if your idea of camping also includes somebody else cooking for you, that could be an option. And if you're looking to camp at one of the state parks, but you don't quite have the reservation just yet, but you still want to make it happen, there are a couple of some great first come first served campsites in the state parks. One of them that just reopened is on the Sonoma coast, and it's the only state park campsite that's on the Russian River. It's called Willow Creek, and it has 11 primitive campsites that you can camp at. No running water, so you're going to have to bring that, but there's a beach there. You're right on the Russian River. It's absolutely gorgeous. And if you want something even closer to home, Mount Tamalpais State Park has Pantole Campground, which is first come, first serve, and the newly opened Bootjack Campground. That just opened a few weeks ago, and that is a first come, first serve. So you can still make it happen, but you might have to take off work a little early on Friday to stake a claim.
There are a number of overlooked parks in Mendocino, aren't there?
There are. I mean, Van Dam State Park is right there, and that's an absolutely gorgeous state park. You can go through the Fern Canyon Trail. I think it's one of the nicest kind of easy bike rides you can do is along that area. And there's a cool little environmental campground that's only about a mile and a half or 2 miles back. So if you kind of want to test out the waters on maybe doing a backpacking trip, but you don't want the car to be too far away from home, check out Van Dam State Park and the environmental campgrounds back there.
And Peter Fish, I noticed that Sunset had best camping. They mentioned Lake George, in fact.
Yeah, I did. And actually, you know, talking about Mendocino County, our cover shot for our May issue, our camping issue, is a park that I didn't even know very well, Westport Union Landing State Park. And it's a glorious...
Where exactly is that?
It is way up the coast. And it's a glorious campground. It's really windy. It's not a place I would actually want to tent in it. But if you had an RV or a trailer, you get some of the best coastal views in California. So it's a fabulous, fabulous place. It's, you know, for strict views, I think it's one of the best coastal camping places, you know, on the state. My other beach, sort of favorite beach state camping park, although you do get the crowds issues that you'll get elsewhere, is New Brighton down in Santa Cruz, which I just think is really beautiful. And you get lots of chances for sort of long beach walks. It's really nice.
Apropos of the last hour, I think I need some injection of new blood because I was talking about Bufano and I was actually – thinking of Pinnacles, which is 80 miles from San Jose.
Our newest national park, yeah.
I'm thinking new park and, you know, too many synapses, too sensory overload happens to me occasionally from time to time. And be sympathetic, those of you who think. There's also, I'm tempted to ask you, not because your name is Fish, but I just haven't talked to my grocer the other day. We were talking about fishing, and he was saying that he'd been up at the Russian River, and he did some fly fishing up there. And he said his shoulder was hurting. He was catching so many fish. It was remarkable. I mean, like within an hour, he said he caught some 45 fish.
And is he selling the fish at the grocery?
No, he said he put them all back. He sent them all back. He sent them all back, in case you're listening. But the fact of the matter is, when Sunset talks about fishing places or places to fish, they're also talking about places that really provide so much more than just fishing.
Yeah. I mean, I think for our readers, we sort of assume that one member of the family may like to fish and the others don't. So, you know, if you get a place along the Russian River or some of the lakes up in the Sierras, we'll assume that, again, one person is going to fish at Lake Alpine and maybe the other people are just going to be happy looking at the water, possibly dunking a toe in the cold water. So
I was looking at something. You're all familiar with GORP, I imagine. You know, it's a good source for outdoor traveling. It's online, GORP.com. But they pick six top spots in Northern California. Let me just get your response to this.
Sure.
They said right at the top they have Point Reyes because of the migration of gray whales in large part, which, by the way, is only going to May now. They have the Redwood Coast because of the redwoods largely, I suppose. And Yosemite, although they mention the crowds, and Mendocino, and Lassen National Park, and then Squaw Valley and Alpine Meadows. And it's interesting, particularly in light of the fact that, who's up in Tahoe? You are, aren't
I live
you?
In Tahoe, yeah.
I do. That resonates, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Tahoe has so much to offer, and, you know, it has the national park scenic beauty, but because it's not a national park, it also has all the commercial recreational opportunities. For instance, you know, you can water ski or rent a boat and do things that you can't do in the national park. So I think it appeals to families who have mixed interests. You know, dad wants to do something, mom wants to do something else, the kids want to do something else.
You want to give your nice plug for the sailboat ride from Incline Village?
Yeah. Everybody says, well, how do we get out on the lake? And there are lots of ways to get on the lake, and there are tons of different tour boats. But I have a couple favorites. I like the Sierra Cloud Catamaran out of Incline Village. It leaves from the Hyatt in Incline Village. And the Sierra Cloud goes three times a day. My favorite cruise, of course, is the Sunset Cocktail Cruise. You can imagine why. But there's nothing quite like Lake Tahoe at sunset. And then out of the South Shore, there's also several sailboat cruises. And when I'm on the lake, I like to have no motors. I like to have no sound. So I think that's a really nice way to do it.
Getting some listener response here, let me give you an idea of, well, Frank from the beginning says, what do your guests have to say about the arrival some years ago in California of ticks that carry Lyme disease? Are most people aware of the risk factor? I would say so, yeah.
I suppose so. I don't think it's quite – I don't think people worry about it the way they do, say, in Connecticut. But certainly in Northern California, I think people are aware of it and, you know, check for ticks. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I hike a lot and I get ticks, so I do pay attention to ticks. But I think the main thing is just to make sure that you get them off of you before they bite you. And generally, you feel one on your body, so you notice that. You notice something crawling around on you, and that's –
generally, but you hear these cases, of course, of Lyme disease where people never even felt a tick or never even saw a tick. It's serious stuff, Lyme disease. Robert writes, it would be good to mention the role the California State Parks play in promoting bicycle touring down the coast. The reduced rate for cyclists and their no-need-for-reservations policy at hiker-biker campsites make the California coast a great route for this healthy and ecologically friendly way to travel. I've appreciated these campsites for bicyclists on several of my tours down the coast over the years.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, I think, that the state parks has these allotted sites, which, you know, you can't just drive up and use. You have to have come in with a bicycle or with a backpack. And those are available for people first come, first serve if you're doing the coastal trip, which a lot of people do in the summertime.
Or even if you want to do something close, like Samuel P. Taylor State Park has a couple of those hike-in or bike-in campsites. So another way around the I don't have a reservation is maybe pack up your bicycle or go on a long hike and show up at the park, and you might have a campsite for you.
Well, on this note, let me go to some of our callers. And Patrick, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. I appreciate everything you do on your show. My question is regarding biking up the coast or biking up Highway 101. What campsites would you recommend, and which route would you recommend, in fact? I'll take my answer off here.
Okay, thank you. Well, you mentioned Samuel P. Taylor Park. That's off 101.
Yeah, I mean, it gets pretty busy. That's kind of the tough part about Highway 1. You could probably go through Boonville. I believe that's Highway 128 that goes through Anderson Valley. That's a lovely ride. Pretty darn hilly, though. But as far as kind of recommended routes, I really think it's kind of getting a map and figuring out which is the least busy, but still is going to offer some great places to pull over to the side and get a campground or maybe even a lodge.
Do they still speak that other language in Boonville? I have to ask Mailer this.
Boonville.
Let me get another caller on, and that's you, Daniel. Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Hiya.
I just like to say I thoroughly appreciate what you do on your program. I only started listening to NPR about 3 or 4 months ago, but it's completely destroyed my use of television. So.
Well, I'm appreciating all this appreciation. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I have a couple of suggestions for anyone who's listening. Little-known hikes that I've taken. Big Sur is mentioned a lot, but people don't know that there are actually natural hot springs in Big Sur, and it's about a 10-mile hike in, so you'd have to backpack. But at the Sykes campground, there are natural hot springs right at the edge of the river that runs through Big Sur. Mm-hmm. And as well, you mentioned Big Basin. There's a hike that you could take at Big Basin that goes all the way down to Santa Cruz and spits you out at the ocean near the 1 freeway.
And we should mention that Big Basin Redwood State Park is California's oldest state park. It was actually established in 1902. Go ahead, Daniel.
It's about a 12-mile hike, but it brings you right to the ocean, and you can camp in Davenport or wherever you'd like to camp. And also little-known places like near Arnold, California, such as Utica, Union, and Spicer Reservoirs. It's kind of low elevation, about 7,000 feet up in the Sierras, but it's free campgrounds, and it's no one knows about it, so there's very few people there, and there's not really any hiking trails. So if you like to go out with a compass and kind of guide yourself through the rocky terrain, those are really good spots.
Well, thank you for all those suggestions, and appreciate hearing from you. There's also got, you know, right in our own backyard here. I mean, right over in the East Bay, you got some pretty spectacular views from Tilden.
You do, or at the top of Mount Diablo. I mean, on a clear day, the top of Mount Diablo, I think, is just heaven, and Tilden Park is great. And, you know, one of my favorite places in the Bay Area was Sunol Regional Wilderness, mm-hmm. where you just, you know, it's really easy to feel like you're hundreds of miles away from, you know, Fremont. And in fact, what are you, 15? It's just terrific.
Here's a listener who raises a question that I know is on the minds of many listeners. It's hard to find state parks that allow dogs. I hike a great deal on Mount Tamalpais, but I have to limit myself to trails in the Marin Municipal Water District, which does allow dogs. Could your guest recommend some state parks where dog owners can enjoy hikes and beaches?
Yeah, well, Sunol Regional Wilderness actually is quite dog friendly, and right now is a great time to be out there. That's in the East Bay, has fantastic wildflowers in April and May, and you can hike to something called Little Yosemite Valley, which if you squint your eyes, maybe it kind of looks like Yosemite, but it's quite beautiful. It's dog friendly, and for beaches, I mean, Point Reyes is a fantastic place, not entirely dog-friendly, but there are a couple of dog-friendly beaches there. Limantour is a dog-friendly beach if you have your dog on a leash, and that's fantastic. It kind of is south-facing, so you get the sun for most of the day. But there's some great dog-friendly places. You do have to kind of like to find them out.
And remember to bring something to scoop up the dog poop.
Always.
Alana writes, it's good citizenship. Any outdoor activity, hiking, camping, rafting, etc., can be enriched by paying attention to the birds along the way. Golden Gate Audubon offers over 100 free bird walks in San Francisco and East Bay each year. It's a great way to start learning about the birds around us, and all you need to do is bring a pair of binoculars and show up. Our trips are listed on our website, www.goldengateaudubon.org, or you can also get notices about them on meetup.com. And we'll take more of your calls. We'll go next to San Mateo. Ma, is that you, Ma?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. You guys are talking really nice about many of the parks I was going to list, but still I will mention four parks that are my favorite. By the way, I had hiked almost every county, state, and national park in the western part of the U.S., and I'm very excited to share four of my favorites. One I will say is the Pinnacle National Park, which was a national monument and recently became national park, one of my best and favorite and hidden jewel in Bay Area. Also, I will say Henry W. Cole, which is the largest state park, and it does make you feel like you are far away from Bay Area. And for the family, I will say Ana Nuevo, which is a park for
Ana Nuevo.
Ana Nuevo. Sorry for my mispronunciation. And then Montana de Oro. And by the way, I have a 4-year-old, and I've been hiking to Pinnacles many times with him, and he himself loves it. And we did most recent one was a 12-mile hike. So Bay Area, it's spectacular, has so many stuff to do, and I really wish that everybody enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much for giving us those highlights. I appreciate hearing from you, Ma. And let's talk about Pinnacle a little bit. What's there?
I would think the wildflowers, where do they stand now, do you think?
Yeah, we're getting near the end now because it's getting quite warm.
Rush out there, bird watching, chance to see a condor, and a fabulous – the other thing, I'm kind of a geology nerd, and what I love about Pinnacles is that the San Andreas runs right through it. And if you actually want to see evidence of sort of what the San Andreas does to the California landscape, that's one of the absolute best places to do it.
And again, it is America's newest national park, just to make that clear. We've also got three state parks up in Sonoma Valley. We're really trying to cover a lot of ground here, as you can tell, and we'll hear from you if you have something you'd like to add. What's your favorite under-the-radar outdoor destination, or what's your favorite destination for that matter? Let's hear from you. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any of your thoughts, questions, or ideas onto our website, kqed.org/forum. Talking with Peter Fish of Sunset Magazine, Anne-Marie Brown, author of California Hiking, and Brad Day, publisher of WeekendSherpa.com. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, if you're planning a summer getaway, this is the place to be. With the wealth of national, state, local, and regional parks, California is home to a staggering array of opportunities for recreation and all kinds of activities. And we're talking with experts who are essentially sharing their tips for best hikes, campsites, waterfalls, picnic spots, all of that and more. And we're getting tips from you, our listeners, as well. We do want to hear from you. Your favorite place to go to camp, to hike, to see beautiful sights. maybe even under the radar outdoor destinations. I asked a guest off Mike where they live, and Peter Fish, who's editor at large of Sunset Magazine, lives in the Sunset, naturally. Brad Day is up in Sonoma. He's publisher of WeekSherpa.com, and Anne-Marie Brown is in Tahoe. She's the author of many books, including California Hiking and 101 Great Hikes of the San Francisco Bay Area, and has a book coming out on California state parks in a couple of months. And what about the state parks in this financial crisis and the lasting impact of it?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting subject. No one's happy about state parks losing money, but I will say that some of the parks have come up with really creative ways to deal with that, and it's actually benefited visitors. And I'll give you two examples. Jack London State Historic Park in Glen Ellen in Sonoma County is a park that's been taken over by a nonprofit group now. And in fact, I think it's better run than it was before, and they're preserving all the historic buildings and running the museum and keeping up the hiking trails. And so basically, the citizens have gotten together and taken over what is owned by the state but can't be managed by the state because of funding. So that's one example. Another example would be a little further north and east in Napa. Both the Napa State Park, again, was scheduled to be shut down because of budget cuts. But through the efforts of a lot of different people, they came up with some creative solutions, including installing yurts in the campground. And again, for people who don't camp, they have walls, essentially. They have cots to sleep on. And so that's become a very big moneymaker for the park. And it's one of the things that has helped to keep that park open. So even though we've had terrible cuts, we've also had really creative answers, and mostly put together by citizens. And I think that a lot of parks have benefited from that.
And Peter, Brad, can we talk to you about the drought and the effect on all of these summer places that we're kind of highlighting here?
Yeah, I mean, you do hear about it, like for people that run, for instance, like a whitewater rafting company on the American River, or somebody who's running a canoeing company on the Russian River. A lot of these kind of recreational outfitters are wondering how much flow they're going to get. And just being outside over the last several months, you do see that spring came a little earlier. Summer feels like it's here a little earlier. And what is that going to do? How is that going to impact things come August, September? What are the wildfires going to be like? All these different things, they all have an effect. And it's just something that it's really kind of interesting to see how it's all shaping out.
I think, you know, things Peter are going to be, yeah, things are going to be fine the next couple of months, even in terms of, I think, of the rafting, because if you know, the dam-controlled rivers in the Sierra, they have to release the water to supply power. But as Brad said, what's going to be hard is going to be kind of August and September, where it's entirely possible that, you know, big chunks of national forest and state parks are going to be, you know, closed to camping just because of the fire danger, which is going to be enormously increased this year. And that's something we're keeping a real close eye on at Sunset.
And could I ask you, speaking about things you're keeping a close eye on, Peter, about Lassen Volcanic National Park? Because you were recently there, and I'm curious to know what you like about it.
I'm really glad that you mentioned it early. So this is my favorite, I feel, undersung park in the West. It gets vastly fewer people than, you know, the big guns in California, Yosemite and Sequoia. And I think it's just a glorious park. And as it happened, my wife's family staged a three-generation family reunion there last summer, from kids ranging from I think 15 at that point, to an uncle who was 83. And it's just a terrific park. And we were there in August. It was a weekday, but still, you know, relatively uncrowded campgrounds, wonderful trails. I took Anne-Marie's advice, actually, and we didn't go up Mount Lassen. We went up Broke Off Mountain, which is a very stiff climb, but some of the best views in Northern California, just phenomenal views. Portions of the park have been hit, you know, were hit badly by a fire a few years ago, but there's lots of the park that are, you know, completely, you know, just untouched by that. And you get all the cool volcanic stuff that you would normally see in a place like Yellowstone. And although we didn't do this, for some people in my family, they would have liked that we did this, they actually have really cool little cabins near Manzanita Lake. So if you don't, in fact, want to sleep in a tent, like some people in my family, you could go into a cabin. So I just think it's a really terrific park and much less crowded than most other options.
You haven't cast them out of your family for not wanting
to. No.
Anne-Marie, let's talk also with you a little bit about Mount Shasta, which is up near there. Yeah,
yeah, I agree with Peter. I'm a big fan of that northern part of California. And what tends to happen, I think, is once you get away from the major metropolitan areas, Los Angeles and San Francisco, of course, you're just going to have less people. So Lassen, I think, I agree with Peter completely. It's one of our absolute best and least visited national parks. Shasta, very much the same type of scenery, but it's surrounded entirely by national forest, not national parkland. So again, that makes it even lesser known. It doesn't get the national parks crowd either. Some of my favorite hikes there, I think Mount Eddy is one of the premier hikes in California by far. If you just want to do short little walks, there's hikes up at Panther Meadows that are very brief. Ton of waterfalls in the Mount Shasta area. And because many of those waterfalls are spring-fed, they're not going to be affected by low snow levels as much as waterfalls in the Sierra will be. So lots and lots to do up there, and a lot of camping that you do not need reservations for. Most of the National Forest campgrounds are first come, first serve up there. Or if you want reservations, you can get on recreation.gov and find a spot that you can pick out in advance if you feel more comfortable doing that.
So, Brad, do you want to talk about spots to pick out in the Sierras?
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of follow up on these under-the-radar places that don't get a ton of people but are spectacular, just 90 minutes northwest of Lake Tahoe is the Lakes Basin, and that's just phenomenal. You actually run into quite a few Tahoe locals who are going on vacation there because there aren't quite as many people. And you can hike to the top of one of the lookouts, one of the fire lookouts, which might be the one of the best views you can get in all of the Sierra. It's about 8,500 feet at the top. I think it's about a 6-mile round trip hike, 2,500 feet of climbing. It's a real butt kicker, but I mean, you get an absolutely tremendous view on the last few 100 feet where you're actually climbing a staircase up to the fire lookout. Is just it's a little exciting. And they have some really cool resorts up there too. If you don't want to camp, they do have a ton of camping, but Sardine Lake Resort has one of the coolest, I think, high alpine bars. It's right on Sardine Lake. It's this little wooden shack. You can have a beer, you can have a cocktail, and you can just watch the sunset dip below the Sierra Buttes, and it's just a really special place.
Well, talking about places that kick your butt, as you just did, here's Ben who writes, along the Lost Coast is great for backpackers who want to see an untouched California coast. Be ready to rough it, but it's well worth it. Matthew writes, I teach kayaking, and I'm always promoting the idea of camping out of kayaks as something that a family can do with a modest amount of safety training. There are lovely boat and campsites on Tomales Bay, Point Reyes National Seashore, Lake Tahoe, and dozens of other waterways. Talk about solitude and ease of access. Kayaking offers this in addition to the water-based perspective of California that not many people take advantage of. And Sarah writes, I haven't heard a mention about the amazing Fort Ross yet. You mentioned it, Sarah, and thank you for it. It's also a great historical site. Kisha writes, Burney Falls is the best. I highly recommend it. I haven't stayed at the cabins, but I will now. John says, I want to put a word in for Wildcat Canyon Regional Park. It's often considered to be the redheaded stepchild to Tilden Regional Park, which is immediately adjacent. Wildcat may not be as beloved as Tilden, but it nonetheless is just as beautiful, chock full of wildlife, and dog-friendly. And Chris writes, what are some good urban parks in the Bay Area, for example, historical monuments?
Oh, boy, there's so many good choices.
I mean, John Muir's historic
embarrassment
house.
Of riches, yeah.
Just thinking of Earth Day, which happened not too long ago. John Muir, founder of the Sierra Club, his historic house where he lived the later years of his life in Martinez, that's a really cool spot, actually. And you can – it's not just about the house. The house is really neat, and you can kind of see where he lived, and he brought up his family. But you can hike up to the top of Mount Wanda, which is named after one of his daughters. And they do guided hikes there. They actually do a guided full moon hike, which is really cool because you can see – if you time it right, you can see the full moon rising behind Mount Diablo and just a whole range of wildflowers up there as well.
Three best urban dog parks, Michael writes. In the Bay Area, Point Isabel in Richmond, Albany, Tilden Park, Berkeley, and Fort Funston, San Francisco for extended hiking in a more remote setting, Morgan Territories near Livermore. And Alex writes, wondering what your guests might suggest for a great weekend getaways for a couple or a guy with a couple of his friends.
So I'll chime in. So one of the parks that I think tends to get short shrift by people in the Bay Area because it's a little bit farther than Yosemite is actually Sequoia National Park, and specifically the southern part of it, the Mineral King area, which is just one of the most spectacular Sierra Valleys in the world. And as it happens, kind of right outside Mineral King, there's a very nice little resort called Silver City Mountain Resort with, you know, nice cabins. And the hiking and the scenery is just world class. And it's a little bit of a longer drive than going to Yosemite, but I think it's amply worth it.
Some great tips here. And actually, listener Sarah also mentioned something that's important to bring into the discussion. She says, sooner it will be possible to travel most of Highway 1 in an electric vehicle with all the new charging stations that are getting installed at places like San Luis Obispo, Point Reyes, St. Horace, Stewart's Point, and others. And we'll go to your calls, more of your calls. From San Jose, Philippe, good morning.
Hi, I want to give a shout-out to the Bay Area Ridge Trail. It runs through San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland. It makes a donut around the bay, and it's accessible through public transportation, and it has difficult hikes and easy hikes. Most of it's complete, but there are some parts where you have to walk on the streets, but it's called the Bay Area Ridge Trail.
Shout-out heard, Philippe. Thank you for that. And on to another caller, Trevor from Fremont. Morning.
Hi. First of all, Mr. Krasny, I love your program, and you are my absolute favorite talk show host of them all.
What is all this affection I'm getting? I'm not used to this, but thank you for that.
But
reactions here. Yeah.
I know that it's already been mentioned already, but Henry Coe State Park is one of the finest parks and the most remote. And a lot of people don't appreciate how much it actually can give you. But when I lost my parents, I spent a good amount of time out there camping and hiking, and found a great amount of solace and comfort in that place. And I think it's truly a treasure.
Good of you to recommend. Anybody want to comment on Coe?
I think what's great about Coe and Morgan Territory is that they're both relatively close into the Bay Area, and they're just – both of them are so big. You get this real sense of sort of spaciousness there, especially at Coe, which is gigantic, that you feel like, you know, really you've, almost like you could be in Montana or something. You just don't have a sense of people being nearby.
It's like Big Sky. Yeah. Trevor, thank you for that call, and thank you for your kind words. Do you want to add something, Brad Day?
Yeah, just to go back to a question from an earlier caller about, you know, planning a trip with friends. I think a lot of people are kind of in that headspace with Memorial Day weekend coming up in a couple of weeks. But I would say this weekend and maybe next week and the next couple of weekends are like probably one of the best times to get out and take that quick trip before Memorial Day weekend hits. And go south, go to Monterey, and you can check out something called the 3 W's, wildflowers, waterfalls, and wildlife. And that's all happening, I think, down in Monterey with the wildlife. I mean, the gray whales are kind of at the end of their season, but still migrating north. You also get a lot of cool sea otters with the wild flowers, hiking along the Monterey Coast Recreation Trail. The ice plant is just like screaming purple pink right now in the Pacific Grove area. And for the waterfalls, going down to Big Sur, if you can't get a campsite in Big Sur, you can always find a place to stay in Monterey, and it's only about a 30-minute drive down to Big Sur from Monterey. And you can check out Pfeiffer Falls. You can check out McWay Falls, which falls right into the ocean. Lots of cool stuff that could be good for the family or maybe good for a group of friends, and kind of has that nice mix. And the next couple of weekends would be a great time to go.
It's not cheap, but I'd also put in a word here for Esalen, which is down in Big Sur, where I go to
definitely
teach from time to time, and which is just beautiful, one of the most beautiful places on the planet. Let's get David in, who's calling us from up in St. Helena. Good morning.
Hi. Hey, guy. Michael, shout out to you, bro. You're one of the greatest as well. So
I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, you're breaking up, but he wanted to know about Star Lake you wanted to recommend up in Yosemite. Anne-Marie?
Star Lake in Yosemite.
Oh, okay. Well, I was in Yosemite, and the place that not many people know about at all is over by Fresno Dome. You got to have a U.S. Forestry map, but me and my brother would take the children up to this place called Star Lake. It was actually a place where a meteor had hit, and it takes about 4 hours to get there by four-wheel drive. You can hike up there, but it's absolutely spectacular. When you get up there, when you finally reach there, it's a a major drop-off of granite blocks that are bigger than three-story homes all the way down into this little tiny lake. And the first time I went there, I jumped in, and it was creepy because, you know, it's like, wow, there's just nothing around for miles. And went swimming in there. As I was climbing back up, you could hear rocks in the very deep underneath just like shifting and moving and falling, and it was just absolutely spectacular. One of the greatest places I've been, which is in the backwoods of Yosemite that not many people go out to. So there's less populated areas in Yosemite that you can go to and not many people know about if you get one of those United States forestry maps. But yeah.
Where do you get those? Do you know?
You know, I would have to say you got to have a friend of a friend of a friend in the fire department in order to acquire them. My dad was a forestry service, and so, you know, but you can get them, and there's places around there that, you know, that you nobody knows about. My sister was a mule packer in the backwoods of Yosemite, and we would hike for 50 miles in and do tour guides with the mules and such, and there's places out there that, you know, you can go away from the busyness of Yosemite and such and find some spectacular play. Oh, man, that Star Lake was just incredible. My kids just loved it. Jump into that lake. It is frozen lake. It felt so good, though. It was just nothing like it. Spectacular.
Well, let me tell you, thanks to Dan, the U.S. Forest Service website has information on maps and where to get them. And thank you, David. Thanks for your kind words, too. Let me go to another caller here, and that's Paul up in Napa. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
You rock. So let's talk about rock climbing. Mount St. Helena up in the Napa Valley. Beautiful hike, about 10 miles up and back to the very top. And the view up there is better than Mount Diablo. You can see Shasta. You can see Lassen on a clear day. It's unbelievable. And the other area that I want to talk about, talking about isolated places, Immigrant Wilderness just north of Yosemite has some of the same spectacular granite that Yosemite has, far less traffic. If you love backpacking, the trails have no quotas. The permits are free. It's so much more user-friendly than Yosemite, which, of course, gets a huge amount of traffic, so it has to be a little more heavily managed.
Well, thank you, Paul. Good to hear from you this morning. Any of you taking notes, or you know about
yeah.
all you're hearing?
I was going to mention that I think going
You never heard of Star Lake, for example.
Well, this is the thing about the Sierras. We all have our own pet names for lakes, so I have a few of my own pet names, too. I was just going to mention that a lot of people think about vacationing. They think about the national parks, but specifically when we talk about the Sierra, the regions in between, I think, tend to be less traveled, and, of course, the scenery doesn't stop at the park borders. So the region Peter mentioned Sequoia National Park and the region between Sequoia and Kings Canyon and Yosemite, which is Sierra National Forest. That's what our caller was talking about with Star Lake. That is, of course, just as beautiful as any of those national parks, but it just didn't get that designation. So same scenery, not the number of crowds.
And the National Forest Wilderness areas are phenomenal. One of the stories we're working on now is this year, is the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, which was signed into being in early September of 1964. And that was, you know, this absolutely groundbreaking act that focused mostly on the national forest lands. So that's where you get, you know, places like Emigrant Wilderness, Ansel Adams Wilderness, San Gabriel in Southern California. And, you know, they're national park caliber scenery with a vastly fewer people. And a lot of them are relatively easy to access because the roads go up to them and you don't have to hike too far in to get camping. And you're going to get the great scenery with far fewer crowds.
Here's Bruce who writes, I recently did a hike for a day at Montgomery Woods on Ore Springs Road west of Ukiah. It is a magnificent grove of old-growth redwoods. I liken it to a natural cathedral. An important question from Sheila. I haven't hiked since my relationship with my partner ended. I'm a small female. I worry about my safety hiking alone. Any suggestions? And think about Mount Tamalpais. There were two hikers who died recently, and so there's been concern up there too. But what about hiking alone and small female? Anne Marie Brown is not a small female, but you know, women who hike alone are concerned about hiking alone.
I'm not sure what that means that I'm not a small female, but
you're just right size. You know, you're Goldilocks.
I'm going to not take that in a bad way.
That is not meant in a bad way. Rest assured.
I think this. I actually think it's very empowering to hike alone, but I think you do need certain skills to do that. So if you don't feel comfortable with your own skills, then you go with a partner. And the wonderful thing today, of course, is that with the internet, it's very, very easy to find meetups, groups of women hikers, et cetera, et cetera. So there's easy way to get companionship on the trails. It doesn't have to be your friends necessarily. It can be friends you haven't met yet. there's so many hiking groups in the Bay Area. It's very, very easy to find them on the web.
And bear spray. That's always a good one. Whenever my wife goes out and she's going to be either by herself or even with me, it's bear spray, even if we're not in bear country, because that's just high-powered mace and can get you out of a lot of situations if they arise.
Here's Derek. Join us, Derek. You're on.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm not sure this place is perfect in the summer, but it's good from September to April, and it's a part of Death Valley National Park, and it's called Saline Valley Hot Springs. And it's about a three-hour drive east and then south of Bishop off of 395. And it's just a gorgeous place where you drive 3 hours in a 4x4 vehicle. You get to these natural oases and hot springs. It's really communal, small group of people that's like Forest Service people and like burners. And it's a great place to go visit during September to April or so.
Okay. Again, some good suggestions coming here from you, our listeners, which we do appreciate. In fact, James writes, Carrizo Plain National Monument in San Luis Obispo County during wildflower season is beautiful and quiet. If you drive up high to one of the campsites, you see a staggering view of the San Andreas Fault. And on our Facebook page, Leslie writes, favorite Bay Area hike, Laurel Canyon Trail in Tilden Park, Sibley Volcanic Monument in Oakland. Another listener on our Facebook page, Katie, writes, our favorites are the off-road areas of Big Sur or Mono Basin. There is still a lot of exploring left to do. And by the way, you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Peter Fish, Anne-Marie Brown, and Brad Day. Brad Day is publisher of WeekendSherpa.com. Anne-Marie Brown is author of a number of books, including California Hiking and 101 Great Hikes in the San Francisco Bay Area. Peter Fish is editor-at-large of Sunset, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller, and that's you, John. Hi.
Hi. So I'm going to be the sourpuss this morning. I'm an avid outdoorsman, fisherman, hiker, backpacker, surfer, app diver, and it's been just a stab through the chest, you know, to show up at spots that I've found over the years. You know, secret spots, so to say, and, you know, there's parking lots full of cars and, or you know, just tons of hikers. And I would encourage listeners and also all the media folks, you know, to, if you're aware of, you know, these beautiful, still secret spots, resist publishing about them and preserve them. Some of my favorite writers, even Tom Steinstra, he's been victim to this. You know, everyone, they're publishing their top 10 lists of waterfalls and hikes and wildflowers. And I can't tell you how many spots that I've been to just become overrun with an article in Men's Journal.
So you want self-censorship for people who have to sell magazines and things, right?
You know what? These people, you know, they love the outdoors too. And, you know, just if you know of a special spot, don't publish it. Because it's not going to be special anymore. I've seen it. I've seen this happen globally.
No, I think it is a fair point, actually. But what do you guys have to say about it?
It's a delicate dance. It's something that you think about. That what we find out is whenever we get a lot of, I don't know if the right word is hate mail, but people criticizing something we've written, we know we wrote something really good. We wrote something that people really like. But on the flip side, I understand what that caller's talking about. But I think you can also make the argument that if you're exposing some really cool places to people who maybe don't have a true appreciation of the outdoors, or maybe they're kind of like getting exposed to some new things, I think ultimately that's a really good thing to get people to get more fired up about preserving some of these places. The Lost Coast, for example, I did that hike 10 years ago, and it wasn't nearly as popular. It's one of the most popular trails you can do now. 10 years ago, it wasn't that way at all, and it's because it's become this kind of secret backpacking trip where you're walking on the beach. It's absolutely stunning, very wild, and now everybody wants to do it because it's got a couple of magazine articles written about it. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad that part of of California is getting exposed, because it shows just how special a place like that is. And maybe we can take action to preserve places like that in the future as well.
Of course, you can understand his being sour about it, too.
Of course. Yeah.
Especially if you have this kind of Thoreau feeling, you know, that you're there by your lonesome and like Walden Pond and all that, and it's solitary and you don't want to be disturbed. And thank you, John, for bringing that up. I'm also, you know, every time we do a restaurant show, for example, I'm always reluctant to mention a few places that aren't that well known or have them mentioned on the air, because they do become crowded. And that's just goes with the territory. Let's hear from Greg next. Greg, thanks for waiting. Join us. Hi.
Hey, Michael. How you doing? Love the show. I just wanted to call in and talk about solo paraplegic camping, which I am. I'm paralyzed from the chest down, and I love to go car camping, getting my little PT Cruiser, and I have a bed made for the back, and I hoist my butt over the back of the bumper and sleep in the back there, and I bring my hand cycle with me. And I've been to most of the places that people are talking about all over, and I take my hand cycle, and it's modified for off-road riding. So I go and do all the trails, and I can do just about everything except for maybe staircases.
Well, I admire you.
Oh,
I'll say
you.
That
appreciate
very
that.
Frankly. Yeah. Good for you. Not letting anything stop you as far as seeing the outdoors. Great.
Like crazy on motorcycle and on bicycle. So, you know, I know California real well. And then after the accident I was in, you know, I had to keep doing it again. So I just sort of came up with this method, and works great.
Well, I hope you inspire others. And I
yeah.
thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Let me hear from another caller, Mike. You're on. Hi.
Hi, yeah, I wanted to recommend a place that's pretty close to the Bay Area that my family and friends have discovered, and that's Silver Lake. And it's also along a string of lakes. I think another one's called Caples, and there's a few other small ones nearby. But it's pretty close to the Bay Area. I'm going to say about 3 hours away. Offers a lot of hiking, swimming, fishing. Close to Kirkwood, which during the summer months has a disc golf course if anybody wants to play frisbee at 8,000 feet. You know, it's just a great area, and it's very, very close to the Bay Area, which I think is, which just those of us with very little time, it's a really a big bonus.
All right. Again, we thank you and thank all listeners who have given us some places to go, and we hope not too crowded. But listen, we appreciate the beauty out there and all the things that there are to do, and we want to thank all our guests who have made it so much easier to understand about places that you can go to. Peter Fish is editor-at-large of Sunset Magazine. Anne Marie Brown is the author of California Hiking and 101 Great Hikes of the San Francisco Bay Area. And you're just the right size, Anne Marie. Brad Day is publisher of WeekendSherpa.com. Thank you all, and thank you for being with us for what was the most enlightening hour and fun hour, too. And you can continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum, if you want to continue making suggestions or talking about the great outdoors. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. We do love hearing from you, so feel free to email us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Gucci, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for coverage of California State Parks are provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.